warm water, even raw stagnant pond water, into delicious crystal clear drinking water. Nitrates, nitrites, radon 222, unwanted heavy metals like lead, mercury, and aluminum are no problem. Foul tastes like chlorine and obnoxious sulfur odors are removed without removing the healthful and beneficial minerals that your body needs. Black Mercury elements flow 1.5 to 2 times faster than ordinary gravity elements, which means it takes much less time to filter your water. Supercharge your gravity filter today. Upgrade to Black Mercury purification elements.
Get a 2-pack, only $99, or a 4-pack, only $188. Call New Millennium, 888-8034.
This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and for the next half hour, they're going to be the views of Chuck Baldwin, who is the Constitutional Party presidential candidate, and you're not hearing anything about this in the regular media because it's controlled any more than you're hearing today that Ron Paul is still in the race for the Republican nomination. But of course his existence as a person is simply deleted, and that's pretty well what's happening. You'll hear about Chuck Baldwin's candidacy on the alternative media, and we've got to be sure that he gets as much exposure as we can on the regular media. Chuck, thank you very much for being with us. Chuck, are you there? Well, I don't know. Could we please get our engineer here? We seem to be having difficulty getting our guest on. Chuck, are you there? Well, could we please get our engineer here, please? Anyway, of course, Chuck's candidacy is an exciting thing as far as I'm concerned. And of course, I think everybody should be very, very grateful to Chuck because he's been willing to put his life and his family's life on hold as he actually runs for the presidency of the United States. So could we please get our engineer here so we could try to get Chuck on the line? Chuck, are you there by any chance? Well, I don't know what's going on. Chuck, are you there? We seem to be having all sorts of problems here. Anyway, I'm not even sure that I am going out, so we seem to be having some. There we are. I'm on the line. Chuck, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, fine. Well, I don't know what was going on. Somebody's sabotaging us just a little bit. Anyway, of course, Chuck has put his life on the line for the time being and is running for the presidency. What motivated you to do it?
Well, I had to know it was God's will, Stan, That was a laborious process, to be honest with you. I threw up every roadblock I could think of to try and, you know, see if this could be something besides God's will. I had to know it wasn't me, it wasn't ego or self-motivated or any such thing as that. I have enough to do, as you know. It's not that I'm looking for something to do with my time. I'm very busy as it is with my church and my radio programs and my syndicated columns, etc. So I did everything I could to, you know, to put any potential roadblock in the path to circumvent any personal ambition of mine. And one by one, they all fell by the wayside, and the door was open wide, and the nomination process came down to me and Alan Keyes. And Dr. Keyes, a very articulate, educated, intelligent man, perhaps the greatest orator in America today, lobbied the delegation very extensively for the nomination. And I I did none of that. I did not lobby. I did not come into the convention asking, you know, to be the nominee. I just allowed my name to be put on the ballot, and I spoke when it was my turn to speak, et cetera. And when the votes were cast, it was 74% for me and 24% for Alan Keyes, and I became the nominee. So I just have to determine that it was God's will that I do this.
Well, I really think it is God's will, and I really believe that at a time like this, in a country in a situation of crisis that it is, with the situation going on in the Middle East, the financial crisis that we have, the threat of an expanding war in the Near East, and the moral degradation of our society, I really believe, of course, God has put you where you are, and we're going to be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Pastor Chuck Baldwin, who has a church down in the Pensacola, Florida area, but he is the Constitution Party candidate for the presidency of the United States. Here at the present time, we have a choice of either a liberal Democrat or a liberal Republican running for the presidency. Both the Republican Party and the Democrat Party are supporting the war in the Middle East, and certainly no matter who is elected, the war is going to continue. We have certainly people within both political parties who are dedicated to globalism and the destruction of the sovereignty of the United States, and that what we call free trade, but is not free trade. It's controlled trade, and of course it's all aimed at bringing about a world government. We have a controlled media. We have a moral breakdown in society. And, well, I believe, of course, God has risen up a person I know and have known for a number of years, Pastor Chuck Baldwin, who is with us today, and he is the Constitution Party, a candidate for the presidency of the United States. And if you haven't read about it in the newspaper, don't be surprised, because the newspaper, in large part, is controlled, as is radio and television and the major publishers in the United States, by five mega corporations that largely control what the American people think. And if it's, we have any effect on this outcome of the election, it's going to have to be the alternative medium. Chuck, are they keeping you pretty busy doing a lot of programs?
I'm very busy between my normal schedule and then doing the radio interviews such as I'm doing now with you and doing the email correspondence and things of that nature. I'm very busy. That's putting it mildly.
All right, fine. Well, I want you to just tell our listeners what you stand for, why your candidacy is going to be different than either the Republican or the Democratic or the Libertarian or certainly a Ralph Nader. Why should people be consider voting for you?
Well, I think three or four things will distinguish our campaign. First of all, we are committed to preserving our nation's sovereignty and our national independence, as you just alluded a moment ago. That's not just rhetoric with us. That's a commitment. We believe that there is a full-fledged assault on our independence and our sovereignty. This is carried out by a number of mechanisms, not the least of which is the allowance of illegal immigration and the North American Union that's being promoted right now by the Bush administration. I would even take the tack that the war in Iraq is also a part of this agenda. But I believe that...
I hope that's all for just a moment. We bring our other stations right back on. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Chuck was just telling us that one of the major thrusts of his candidacy, his presidential candidacy, was to maintain the sovereignty of our nation, which is under attack because of the uncontrolled immigration, the war in the Middle East is simply a part of this effort to destroy the sovereignty of our nation, the trade agreements that we've made. It's all about destroying the sovereignty of America, but most people can't pick this up, so you go ahead and keep on telling me the rest of the story.
Well, I, one of the things that we will do is we will definitely seal the border. We will make sure that employers who knowingly hire illegal aliens are prosecuted. You cut off the food supply and you close the border and you can end illegal immigration. It's not really that difficult. It's just a matter of will. And we would have the will to do it. The North American Union, the NAFTA superhighway that's under construction, going from Mexico all the way to Canada, to bring in Chinese goods from Mexican ports, bypassing our ports in Los Angeles and San Diego and so forth. All of that would stop if we obtain the White House. We would this new world order that George Bush Sr. first told us about is going to come crashing down the day that we take the oath of office. We are just going to preserve our national identity, our integrity, our sovereignty. And speaking of the war in Iraq, we are committed to bringing our troops home to as safely as possible, as soon as possible. And we're going to end this incursion into the various sovereign states of the world. We do not believe that the Constitution would allow that our troops be used as the militia for the United Nations. We would only fight defensive wars, wars that would directly protect the security, safety of the people of the United States of America. We would stop this this incursion into foreign lands, this nation building and empire building that's been going on for a long time. All that stops the day that we're elected. So our campaign is completely different from either the Republican or the Democrat campaign.
Well, now, how do you feel about national health care? That is a big issue that is being debated between the Republicans and the Democrats at the present time. How will we take care of the health of the American people if you were president?
Right. Well, the first thing we have to do is get the government out of it. Everything the government touches collapses, and the costs increase and service goes down. If you want to destroy health care in America, you'll just nationalize it. You look at the nations that have nationalized health care, and the people that can afford it will make the trip across the ocean or across the border from Canada into the United States to get health care here, because the health care we have, with all of its problems, is certainly better than the nationalized health care that we find in socialized countries. So the worst thing we do for health care is to socialize it. We must begin to get the private sector back at work in the healthcare again, and that's what we would attempt to do.
Well, of course, now George Bush promises to help education. He had his No Child Left Behind program, and he felt that the federal government could, increase our reading scores, help with the education of our children because our educational system is failing. How would you go about, of course, getting the federal government to increase the reading ability of our children and to improve education here in the United States?
Yeah. Well, first we would seek to eliminate the Department of Education altogether. I remember whenever Newt Gingrich put together the Contract with America back in 1994, which I don't believe he really meant. Well, in fact, I know he didn't, because he didn't follow through with it. But the ruse of the Contract with America was used to elect the Republicans in both houses of Congress, first time in 70 years that had been done. And one of the things that they promised to do was to eliminate five departments at the federal level, one of which was the Department of Education. Afterward, of course, when they got in power, they did just the opposite. They strengthened and augmented the Department of Education and all the other departments. But we would destroy the Department of Education, get rid of it altogether, get the federal government out of education, send it back to the states and to the parents and the local communities.
All right, fine. Well, what are we going to do about the moral breakdown in society? I mean, about the pornography, about the illegitimacy, about, about the crime that we have. You know, I'm sure you're well aware of the fact we have almost one out of every 32 adults in the United States today is either in prison, probation, or parole. How are we going to possibly overcome the moral breakdown in our society?
Well, obviously, we're not going to solve moral problems by the federal government passing legislation. That's not going to do it. I think we can keep the foreign gangs out of America. When you look at the increase in crime, you look at MS-13 and some of the other Hispanic gangs that are coming across the border, wreaking havoc in our southwestern states, and now they're moving north and east, and we're beginning to deal with it. I know right here in Pensacola, Florida, we've had several acts of criminality conducted by illegal aliens coming across, gang members and so forth. So when you close the border, you get rid of that criminal element that's coming across the border as they are now. But I tell you what I really think, and I would use the bully pulpit as far as what I could do as president. I believe that I would use the bully pulpit to encourage the pastors and the churches to begin preaching the Bible again, Stop trying to be prosperity theology magicians, and stop trying to look at the church as simply some kind of an organization for prosperity's sake, and start preaching the word. I would use the example to encourage the churches to preach the word and to teach people the word of God. I think the problem in America today is our preachers and our pulpits. They're more engaged in building an empire, building a facility, building a reputation, a retirement program. They're CEOs more than they are preachers. If we can get the preachers preaching the Bible again, I think that'll solve most of our problems in terms of the moral breakdown.
Well, no, because we've got real financial problems in the United States today. Right? We find that, you know, certainly an awful lot of people are going to lose their homes. We've already had almost 2 million homes certainly have gone into foreclosure. We're having to borrow a couple of $1 billion every single day to pay our debts as a nation. And certainly many people acknowledge we're in a recession. Some people think we're going into a depression. If you were the President of the United States, how would you deal with this financial crisis, what seems to be growing in America?
Yeah. Well, the housing situation, I think, was created by the feds and the way that they manipulated the housing market, and now the bubble is beginning to burst. But I think really the main culprit in this recession is the energy cost. We cannot sustain $4 a gallon as an economy and prosper. We just can't do it. Everything is linked to the price of oil. And when you stop and think about the monopoly that the foreign nations have in supplying our energy sources, and you realize that at the same time, we have enough oil in Alaska to last the nation for 200 years that we're not even drilling. We've got oil in the Dakotas. We've got oil in the Gulf of Mexico that we're not drilling. We've got hundreds of oil wells that are already operational that we're not using. We have plenty of resources right here in our own country to meet our energy needs. We don't need OPEC, and we don't need the Department of Energy. We need to get, I would dismantle the Department of Energy. I would get the federal government out of the energy business, and I would let free enterprise work again. I would get the oil production moving, and I also would encourage more nuclear development. We haven't developed a nuclear plant in, I guess, what, 35 years or more.
Right.
We have the ability to supply our energy needs, but the powers that be would rather that we be dependent upon OPEC and other foreign nations for their own international purposes. And I believe that, again, it goes back to sovereignty. It goes back to independence. We don't need OPEC. We don't need Saudi Arabia. We have the resources, and we need to develop those resources.
But, Chuck, if we have the resources, why aren't we developing them? Why are they letting, gasoline go to almost $4 a gallon? And,
yeah.
And suddenly, if we have the resources, why aren't they being developed today?
Well, we can only speculate, can't we, Dr. Stan? But personally, I think it's all a part of this desire to merge America into a globalistic entity. I really think that they're trying to create a global economy, and that includes a global currency. You've got the European Union now that has the euro that replaced the currencies of Europe, and now they're going to try and bring in the Amero here in the United States as a part of this North American Union. And you can't bring in that entity unless you can present the American people with a need. And I think that this inflated gas for energy prices and all of the recession that we're in and the housing collapse and so forth is all a part of creating this need. What's going to be the answer? Well, they're going to bring in the Amero and the North American community. And we're going to regionalize. I think it's a plan to just create more of a regionalized entity here in the United States.
Well, I certainly concur. But what about the environmental problems we face? What about global warming? And certainly, according to Al Gore, why all the scientists in the world agree that global warming is a reality. There's only a few deniers out there that can't understand that the global ice caps are melting. So what are we going to do about global warming? Certainly, if we actually were to sign the Kyoto Protocol, it would destroy the industry. The United States would have to really give up, production of electricity, most of our industries. So what are we going to do to face the reality of global warming?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to face the reality that global warming is a hoax. I think Al Gore, with all due respect, I think he's all wet. Even the founder of the Weather Channel came out and said his science was bogus. There's no science behind it. And I just think we have to face reality that we have the energy and we need to use the energy, and we cannot jeopardize the security and peace of the United States for some bogus science.
Yeah, of course, I think that it's so important to understand that this has been one of the coldest winters we've ever had. And the people, of course, it does matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough and you control the medium, why, the people will believe. They found that in Hitler's Germany. We see this in America today, where literally everything in the media tells you global warming is a reality, except the scientists who study will tell you it's all bogus. We're going to be back in just a moment with Pastor Chuck Baldwin here. If you have any questions, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Pastor Chuck Baldwin. And certainly, how do you stand on gun control? Because, of course, the liberals are in favor of gun control. They say if we took the guns away from the law-abiding people, why, we wouldn't have any crime. Certainly, John McCain certainly has a very, very poor record as far as gun control. Both Hillary and Barack certainly are in favor of gun control. Where do you stand on what I think is a vitally important issue?
Yeah, except for the direct intervention of God, Dr. Stan, the Second Amendment is all that stands between us and tyranny. And you're right. The two major candidates of the Democratic Party and John McCain on the Republican side, they're all miserable when it comes to their record on the Second Amendment. John McCain is no friend to gun owners. Larry Pratt over Gun Owners America has been warning people about John McCain for many years. He's a disaster on the Second Amendment, as is Obama and Hillary. Any one of those three will be no friend to gun owners in the next 4 years if they are elected. If I'm elected, you can count the fact that gun owners and honest gun dealers will have the best friend they ever had in the White House. I will fight with every ounce of my being to protect and preserve the Second Amendment of the Constitution, the right to keep and bear arms.
All right. Well, now, what about the war on terror? You know, everybody knows we're involved in a war on terror. We're being threatened by the Islamic world. And, in fact, there are many people feel that if we don't destroy the Islamic world, why, they're going to come over here and destroy us. And yet, of course, if you look at so many of the trials that the government has brought, so many of the charges the government's brought against the so-called terrorists here in the United States, for instance, the people are going to blow up the Sears Tower. Why, of course, we find out that the juries, when they heard the evidence, have simply thrown the case out not once but twice. And now the government wants to prosecute them again, because, of course, they have to convince the American people that the war on terrorism is real. How do you feel about the war on terrorism, and what should we be doing?
Well, the first thing we've got to do is seal the border. I mean, I think it's ludicrous to think that we're fighting a war on terrorism halfway around the world when at the same time we're leaving our borders wide open for any potential terrorists to sneak across and do harm to our people. I don't think we can take seriously the administration's war on terrorism as long as they're not willing to close the border. So the first thing we do is close the border to be sure that people who would intend to come over here and harm us are not able to do so. And then secondly, we don't invade nations unilaterally, in preemptive style invasion as we did in Iraq. That's not only morally repugnant, but it's unconstitutional. And never in the history of our nation have we ever done anything such as this. This is brand new, and quite frankly, it's contrary to all of the principles upon which our country was founded. The way you deal with terrorists is the same way that Thomas Jefferson dealt with them back whenever he was president, and we had problems with the Barbary pirates attacking our vessels and harming our citizens and stealing our property, etc. He asked Congress to pass a bill of mark and reprisal, which they did, and then that allowed him, as a commander-in-chief, to exercise limited engagement against specific targets of terrorism. He would send whatever military forces were necessary, including private forces, if called upon, to engage a selected enemy, a finite battle, taking the battle directly to the terrorists and not sending troops in a preemptive invasion on entire nations like we did in Iraq, and we see what's happened there.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Pastor Chuck Baldwin, and he's running on the Constitution Party ticket. And if you haven't heard about it, it's because the people who control your the media don't want you to hear about it. We have freedom of the press, and that means if you own the press, well, you have the freedom to suppress whatever you want to. Well, Chuck, one of the things that said is that we were to pull our troops out of the Middle East, pull our troops out of Afghanistan, and out of Iraq. Why there would be chaos in those countries. We have to keep our troops there to avoid chaos. How would you respond to that?
Well, if people really think that through, then what they're saying is that we're going to have to be there forever. Because the whole contention is that if we leave, then automatic chaos ensues. And then you get back to John McCain's premise that it's a 100-year war. I don't think the American people accept that, and I certainly don't accept that. I think the decision has to be made at some point that we are no longer fighting a war, and we're not. We're not fighting a war over there. We are occupying a country. We are an occupation force, and the longer we stay as an occupation force, the longer that we are going to incite people in that region of the world against us, the longer people there in Iraq and surrounding countries are going to resent our presence, I think the more problems that we're going to create. I think in the long run we lose more by staying than we do by leaving. And I realize that we have to withdraw systematically, deliberately, laboriously. You just can't withdraw that many people overnight. You have to protect all our military personnel as well as our civilian personnel that are over there. We would not do it haphazardly. Obviously, you have to protect our interests and our people in that process. But still, with all that said, the decision has to be made by the man sitting behind the desk to bring our troops home, and that's what I would do.
All right, fine. Let's get your telephone number or your website out so people, if they wanted to contribute to the Constitution Party, would know how to get in touch with you.
Right. So let me give you two websites. The Constitution Party website is constitutionparty.com, all one word, constitutionparty.com. And my website is Baldwin2008.com.
All right.
One word, Baldwin2008.com.
All right, fine. And so that's constitutionparty.com and Baldwin2008.com?
That's it.
All right, fine. Let's go to Hartwell, who's calling from Louisiana. Hartwell, do you have a question for Pastor Chuck Baldwin?
Yes. I believe that a president today of the United States needs to be well-rounded in many subjects. And I would like to bring up the subject of 9/11.
All right, fine. Well, I don't want to get... I have a question, fine, but if not, why, of course...
My question is, do you believe that the Twin Towers were brought down with demolition charges, or did the fire cause the buildings to fall down?
All right, fine. Let's ask Chuck. Do you want to comment on that at all?
I don't have any knowledge that it did. I don't have any way of knowing that it did. I met Stephen Jones... out in Utah a couple of years ago, and I believe he's one of the men that is questioning the theory that the planes and the subsequent fire brought down the buildings, and he challenged my thinking with some very interesting ideas. And all I can say about it is if I were elected, I would not hesitate to appoint an independent investigative team to analyze that to the satisfaction of everybody that has a question. I think the American people have a right to know and to be satisfied in their own minds that their government's telling them the truth. And I would certainly not be averse to an investigation to seek that.
And you know, one of the most interesting things, I'm reading an article by a pathologist who was in charge of identifying the bodies over there. And do you know that the fire burned in the basement of the World Trade Center for 3 months with an intensity that was greater than, of course, of a crematorium? How could that possibly burn? A steel building burned for 3 months with a tremendous amount of heat? I mean, there are a lot of unanswered questions that we really don't have, and certainly if we get either McCain or Barack or Hillary in, why, they're never going to have an independent investigation.
Exactly.
Would you promise the American people that if you were elected, there would be an independent investigation of what happened on September 11th?
Yeah, I just said that. I would be more than happy to be sure that investigation took place. And like I said, I don't have any answers. But like you, Dr. Stan, I have a lot of questions. And I've heard that others have many questions as well. And I think, again, that the American people deserve to know the truth. And if there are serious questions about something of that magnitude, and obviously there is, then I certainly would not hesitate to appoint an independent investigative team to give the American people the facts.
Well, I think that, Sidney, it is such an important thing that the people trust the government. And
absolutely.
Increasingly, I don't think that the average American trusts our government.
I don't.
And, Sidney, only 21% think that George Bush is doing a good job over there in Iraq. But, of course, nothing's going to change no matter whether we get the Democrats or Republicans in. Our guest has been Pastor Chuck Baldwin, and he is the Constitution Party candidate for the presidency of the United States. Chuck, thank you so very much for being here.
Thank you very much, Dr. Stan.
God bless, and the best of luck. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right, fine. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest was Chuck Baldwin, Pastor Chuck Baldwin, who is a minister, has a church in Pensacola. We visited him. He's an honest man. In fact, I'm really very, very pleased to know that we're going to have at least some alternative to Tweedledum or Tweedledee, to Amos and Andy, to Sidney, Martin and Lewis, to Bud Abbott and Lou Costello, to Laurel and Hardy, because, of course, people really have to understand that the two-party system is set up so that we can go to the polls every 4 years and vote the scoundrels out of office. But nothing is going to change. Now, that is not my philosophy. That is actually what was said by Professor Carol Quigley, who was a liberal historian who taught at Princeton and Harvard before he went to Georgetown University and met his most famous student, a young man named William Jefferson Clinton. But in Professor Quigley's classic book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, on pages 1247 and 1248, Professor Quigley explained how the system really works. He understood there's a ruling elite. That's what his book was all about. And that is why Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, was suppressed for so many years. In fact, somebody came in, bought up the McMillan Company, and according to Professor Quigley, they immediately destroyed the place to the first half of his book. So they could not be reprinted, and then lied to him over a period of years. And if that really sounds so incredible to you, let me, of course, suggest you get the interview we have with Professor Quigley, not an interview that I did, but an interview that was done by a reporter from the Washington Post, at which I purchased the right to use from Mrs. Quigley after Professor Quigley had died. When I was back at Georgetown University going through Professor Quigley's papers, and I spent several weeks actually going through Professor Quigley's papers, and we were there at Georgetown University on two occasions to get the information, which I think is so vitally important, in which we offer to the American people, to our ministry, and of course we offer Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. We have an interview with Professor Quigley, which you will never hear elsewhere, as he tells you about these crazy right-wingers who honestly believe that emblem on the back of the dollar bill, the pyramid cap on the all-seeing eye, is the emblem of the Illuminati, and as he points out, and I think he's absolutely right, that emblem has been around for 5,000 years. And, of course, but the question is, that he never raises, Professor Quigley never raises, is why is there an occult emblem on the back of the dollar bill representing the ancient mystery religions? Because that's what it's all about. In fact, most people don't even know what the mystery religions are. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course we had to let Chuck Baldwin go. He has so many demands on his time. We feel we're very, very fortunate to have him. So we're going to have open lines the rest of this hour. And if you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And certainly, if Chuck Baldwin were to make a statement that he, believed that we haven't been told the truth about 9/11, why the media would have a great time with him. They would attack him viciously as a right-wing extremist. I think his answer was very correct. We really don't know, but what we do need is an independent investigation. Because you remember, of course, we had the initial investigation, by the House, Senate, and Intelligence Committee, and President Bush insisted on actually censoring that report. He left out 25 pages. 28 pages, actually, of the initial report was removed by the president. If there is nothing to conceal, then why did they remove 28 pages? And if you get the report and you read it through, and we actually have a copy, you'll find that place after place after place, they simply censored the information they didn't want the American people to know about. But, of course, the report, and we actually have the testimony by the woman who actually headed that commission, and we have make it available to Radio Liberty. And there's no question the government knew ahead of time the attack was coming. They even knew it was going to involve the World Trade Center, and that material was totally censored out of the initial report. And then, of course, the second report was even more ridiculous. And this was the so-called 9/11 Commission report, and President Bush insisted. He insisted that he would have a final say on who was in that commission, and of course, the figureheads in the House and the Senate appointed some people. They actually had a United States senator who believed it was all a fraud and wanted to get to the bottom of it, and they forced him off the committee. And, of course, the head of the committee was Thomas Keene, the former Governor Keene, who was actually a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. The assistant chairman of the commission was Lee Hamilton, who was a former member of the Trilateral Commission and a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And then you had, of course, a number of people. About half the 9/11 Commission came from the membership roles of the Council on Foreign Relations. Do you really think that we were going to get an independent evaluation of what happened on September 11th? I do recommend, of course, the book. Written by Thomas Keene and Lee Hamilton after that, Without Precedent, because there's some fascinating material in that. How it got in there, I will never know. But, I mean, certainly there, of course, Condoleezza Rice was asked, why didn't you do anything at all? Why you knew the attack was coming, and I think you'll find this on page 181 or 183 of the book Without Precedent by Thomas Keene and Lee Hamilton. Let me give our telephone number. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I will quote here from the book Without Precedent. And I was just going to see if I could find the exact page number that this occurs on. But, of course, anybody who wants to look it up will be glad to get you the information. But I will even send you the pages out of the book. I believe it's 181 or 183. But this is what Condoleezza Rice said, according to the book. Jamie Gorelick pressed the issue with Condoleezza Rice as to why the Bush administration has not held senior-level meetings on counterterrorism before September 2001 and why more had not been done to take defensive measures in response to the threat reporting over the spring and the summer of 2001. Condoleezza Rice at that point pointed out that the nation simply wasn't prepared to take drastic action and said, until there is a catastrophic event that forces people to think differently, that forces people to overcome all customs and old cultures and old fears about domestic intelligence, you don't get that kind of change. And that's what it's all about, ladies and gentlemen. Let me read that quotation again. Jamie Gorelick pressed the issue as to why the Bush administration had not held senior-level meetings on counterterrorism before September 2001 and why more had not been done to take defensive measures in response to the threat reporting over the spring and summer. Now she's asking Condoleezza Rice, and Condoleezza Rice responds that the nation simply wasn't prepared to take a dramatic action against al-Qaeda before 9/11, either abroad or in reforming government here at home. And Condoleezza Rice said, until there is a catastrophic event that forces people to think differently, that forces people to overcome all customs and old culture and old fears about domestic intelligence, you don't get that kind of change. And that's what 9/11 was all about. It was about creating a change in our attitude towards domestic intelligence and government, of course, monitoring us from the cradle to the grave. And if you want to get the exact quotation, it comes from the book Without Precedent. Or, of course, this is included in several places in my little inexpensive pamphlet called The True Story of 911, which is a compilation of our newsletters. And it's simply available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And we've got Rick calling in from Texas. Hi, Rick. How are you doing?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing just fine, thanks.
I wanted to, is it all right if I change the topic?
Sure, you go ahead. We're having an open line, and so you can say whatever you want to.
Okay, I was just, wanted to talk about the common thing that's going on in the church of how there's really like two people of God. There's the Israelites, and then there's the church people.
Can you speak up just a little louder? So you want to say that there are two people of God?
How the church is... I wanted to talk about how that became, you know, a part of the fundamental belief system of a lot of Christians is that, you know, there's the physical sons of Abraham and then the spiritual sons of Abraham.
All right, fine.
And I think that goes back to a guy named Darby and Schofield, a couple of guys...
in the 1800s, right.
Yeah, and the way I read the Bible, it seems like, well, Paul says in Romans that, you know, not all Israel isn't all Israel, he said. Israel isn't all Israel, and he said.
And where does he say that?
Romans chapter 8, I believe.
Does he say that Israel is not all Israel? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, what he's talking about with Israel is, as the people that believe versus the people that, you know, don't believe. And so...
Well, of course, I think most Israelis believe in the Torah, and at that time they believed in the traditional beliefs of Judaism. Many of them, of course, did not embrace Christianity, though.
Yeah, and he starts talking about the child of the promise and the seed, not seeds, plural, but seed, singular, meaning Isaac... Of course, was the seed of the promise, the seed of the promised child of the father of faith, who was Abraham. But then, so people were, they were believing, and they told Jesus that we be not born of, you know, Jesus had told them that, and it might seem like I'm changing here, but I'm not, I'm staying on the same topic.
What are the points you're trying to make there, Rick?
Well, I just think we shouldn't say people, you know, the way I see it, you're only saved through faith. And I think God would have to change to save people because, see, from the way that Schofield and Darby said, he's going to come down, they're going to see him because of the prophecy in Zechariah, and they'll say, you know, who pierced your hands, who pierced your feet, and by their eyes they'll be saved, there'll be a great repentance. But the way I read that, it says each family will mourn apart, the husbands and wives apart, the family of David, the family of Nathan, the family of Shimei, and the family of Levi.
All right, but
so it's a personal recognition that we personally need him.
I think that's right. We're saved by faith, and you can't save your wife. You can only save it. It's a matter of belief. Well, this has nothing to do specifically. Is there any parting comment you want to make before I let you go? We're saved by grace through faith.
Well, I think it's getting to a point where they could stage something and everybody believes Jesus because they see.
Well, I think that maybe they probably will. In fact, we're told in the latter days that the saints will be deceived, and certainly many people think that they are going to bring false Christs. In fact, Jesus warned us there'd be many false Christs coming into the world, and I think that we have some of them right today. One of them, of course, is Reverend Moon, and there've been other similar false prophets. You know, the fellow who created Scientology was one of those. And so we've got a lot of people out there who are confusing the issue. But what's the major point you want to make, Rick?
Well, it's just that I think the church is kind of made a special deal of the nation of Israel. And I'm not against anybody, but You know, that was given by, the land was given by seed money by a Rothschild, the Balfour Declaration.
But what does that have to do with the Bible? I mean, that basically, if you read the Bible, we're told that, you know, at one time the children of Israel would be reunited and brought back to the land. Doesn't matter who put up the money there. God said it was going to happen, and whether Rothschild put up the money or the Zionists put up the money, God had predicted the children of Israel would return to the Holy Land, and they've done it. Isn't that exciting?
Well, I just...
In other words,
I don't know. There's
no other instance in all history where a nation has been reconstituted after almost 2,000 years of dispersal. And there are a lot of people who try to play that down. I think it is one of God's miracles that the children of Israel have returned to the Holy Land. Not only that, but it was prophesied in the scriptures that, of course, they would go back to using the shekel. That's exactly what they have done. And they've been around there for 60 years, and time again, by all rights militarily, they should have been destroyed, and they haven't been. And I believe God has brought them there for a purpose. Now, there's some people who hate the Jews, and no matter what you say, they're going to continue hating them. But I don't. I believe God has a place for the Christians in the final days. I believe he has a place for the Jews in the final days.
I don't hate them.
I see. Okay.
I think Lucifer, that's one of his deals. You're either on one side or the other. I just think the people of the children of promise are the children of faith, and that's Jews. That's the Jews that believe, and that's also... I mean, that's basically just Christians.
In other words,
a lot of Christians that don't believe.
All right, fine. All right. In fact, then you'd write off any Jew who believes in the Jewish faith but doesn't believe in the Christian faith.
Well,
I mean, basically,
I don't see how you can be saved by seeing him come down from heaven, because you're...
But basically, of course, Rick, this has nothing to do with God's plan. It doesn't matter what you and I think. It's what it says in the Bible. And God said that the Jews would be returned to the Holy Land, and they have been. And all the prophecies dealing with the Jews returned to the Holy Land have been fulfilled. And I think these are exciting times. And to try to, of course, minimize that and say, well, of course, they came back because of the Rothschilds. It's just somehow God couldn't use the Rothschilds to bring the children of Israel back into the Holy Land? Do you think God would be incapable of using the Rothschilds?
No. But
all right, I don't either. But thanks very much for calling, Vic. And our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And there's so many people out there who are so confused on the things that are going on. And certainly what Rick was talking about Darby and Schofield and dispensationalism. Yes, there's a lot of false gospel that's been, and false doctrine that's been introduced into the Christian church for times such as this. And this is why I think we have to study the Bible, and we have to understand the amazing things that were prophesied over 2,000 years, sometimes almost 3,000 years ago, that are coming to fulfillment in our time. And we're told in the latter days, in Revelation 13, that there will come a time when you never need to be able to bind or sell, unless you bore the mark of the beast or were known by the number of his name. That number was 666. Has there ever been in all of recorded history a time before when they were able, of course, to take us onto an electronic system of buying things and Visa cards and other means of electronic buying? And, of course, really not. And basically what we're seeing is an amazing situation where we may one day go into a totally cashless society. And, of course, everything will be handled electronically. In fact, if you watch our ads on television very often, they will have these advertisements for Visa cards, and they'll show everything going on, activity, all sorts of people are doing all sorts of things in the store. And then somebody comes along, and they're going to use cash to buy things in the store. And everything comes to a stop. And what you must understand is your mind is being conditioned by that advertisement. That, of course, we should all be using electronic cards. We should all be purchasing things electronically. Won't that be ever so much more efficient than the old ideas of cash? And these were the ideas. And what the mark of the beast is, I have no absolute knowledge. It could be an electronic chip of some sort. It could be an electric card. But whatever it would be, of course, there's never been a time in all history where, of course, we could actually be on a totally cashless society until right now. We're told in the latter days, of course, it will be as it was in the times of Noah, where people were giving in marriage. And, of course, remember, the times of Noah were totally corrupt and evil and hedonistic, and it was because of the horror that existed at that time that, of course, God destroyed the earth except for Noah's family. And, of course, what people really don't understand is that the occultists believe that the society that existed at that time was ancient Atlantis. And they have been working for generations, really, of course, going back at least till early 1600s, with the idea that the United States was going to become the new Atlantis and was going to replace the old Atlantis. In fact, Francis Bacon, who was a leader of the Rosicrucians in the early 1600s and an advisor to the Queen and deeply involved with British intelligence at that time, actually had made arrangements to send a number of people to the United States with the idea, of course, that they would, of course, take over our country and it would become then the center of the New Atlantis. Francis Bacon wrote a book called The New Atlantis. And America was to become the New Atlantis. We actually have a fascinating DVD put out by Chris Pinto. It's when Chris Pinto spoke at our conference back in, I guess it was about a year and a half ago. That was our October conference, which we do hope that many of you will be attending. It's going to be on October 26th. It's going to be a Sunday, but it is the best day when so many people could come who otherwise couldn't. But Chris Pinto gave a talk on the Atlantis connection, because this feeling about Atlantis is really so prevalent today within the Luciferian movement. And America is the new Atlantis, which is, of course, why we have become so immoral and depraved here in this country. Why we have a one in every 32 adult males is in prison, probation, or parole. Of course, in the black community, 75% of the children are born out of wedlock, and the Christian community, in the white community, about 30-35% are born out of wedlock. We have become totally sensual. We've turned our back on God and God's teaching. And God told us these things were going to happen in the latter days. And he also told us that many, many Christians would leave the faith in the latter days. And before, I think it's 2 Thessalonians, the second verse, second chapter, it talks about how before the man of sin comes, there'll be a great falling away here in the church. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And of course, we were having open lines here. We wanted to talk to Chuck Baldwin, who I personally think is an excellent candidate for the presidency. And short of Ron Paul running for the presidency, and Ron Paul has said that he's going to stay in the Republican Party, would not run as a third-party candidate, I think that there is no person in the United States today I would rather see running for the presidency on the Constitution Party ticket than Chuck Baldwin. I've known him for a number of years. He's a man of honesty and integrity. He loves America. He loves the Lord. And I think that those make him well qualified to become a presidential candidate. And you know, basically we're living in very unusual times, and I believe that God is going to raise up people to actually take positions of leadership. Now, I'm not saying America can be saved as a nation. In fact, as you look and see what's happening, I would wonder if God would even want to intervene and save this country. But I think, of course, it's amazing that Chuck Baldwin, who did not campaign for the presidential nomination, coming up against Alan Keyes, who is certainly one of the most articulate orators that I have ever heard. In fact, he is one of the great, probably the single greatest orator in the United States today. So Chuck Baldwin, after Alan Keyes had spoken, and Chuck is not that dynamic a speaker. He's a good speaker, but he's not a dynamic speaker. And comparing the background of Alan Keyes and Chuck Baldwin, the delegates there from all across America, delegates sent to the Constitution Party Convention, chose Chuck Baldwin as their candidate. I think that is truly miraculous. Certainly, Alan Keyes has the ability to mesmerize an audience, actually to control an audience, and yet, for some reason, why the delegates to the Constitution, little party convention, the Constitutional Party Convention, I chose Chuck Baldwin. I believe God's hands in that because I believe Chuck Baldwin loves the Lord, and I believe he loves America, and I believe he's going to be an excellent, excellent candidate. And it gives us something already to support. I mean, the choice between supporting John McCain and either Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton is like a choice between being shot or being hung. Which one do you really want? And as far as I'm concerned, I don't like either choice, and I don't think most Americans do. And I think most Americans really don't know what to do, other than the fact that they feel the Democrats are so much worse than the Republicans, they'll probably vote for the Republicans, and that is no way to waste your vote. This is not. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I do hope that many of you out there in the listening audience, enjoyed our interview with Chuck Baldwin. And if you need more information about his candidacy, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to talk to you about it. I've known Chuck personally for a number of years. I consider him a friend. We've interviewed him a number of times. We've been to his church. We've had dinner with him, and he's a man who loves the Lord and loves America. And I think that we are indeed fortunate to have a man of his caliber running for the presidency at this time, because the choice between John McCain, who wants a 100-year war in the Middle East, who is so far to the left, he's gotten all sorts of financial support from George Soros in the past, and all the liberals have funded John McCain. A choice between John McCain and either Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton is really not much of a choice at all. We are living in exceptional times. We are, as a nation, financially bankrupt. We're the greatest debtor nation in the world. We are morally bankrupt. We're the greatest exporter of pornography and filth and sensuality in the entire world. And I believe God's going to bring his judgment on this nation. And maybe he's given us one last chance, and that would be Chuck Baldwin's candidacy. What are the American people really worthy of him taking his time and effort to run for the presidency of the United States? Well, certainly we commend him for his courage in doing what he's doing, because believe me, if it looked like he was going to win, they would probably do what they did to Ross Perot. That was put a contract out on him. Actually, I talked to the man who was hired by the CIA to actually kill Ross Perot. You remember when he was the presidential candidate back in 1988, I think it was, and of course he dropped out of the campaign because he said there was an effort to kill him and his family, and everybody laughed and scoffed. I talked to the assassin. His name is Chip Tatum. We did a number of interviews with Chip. His body recently did wash ashore somewhere in South America, according to Ted Gunderson. Of course, Chip Tatum tried to outrun them and to hide, but when you expose the fact that you're a paid CIA assassin and you were paid to actually assassinate a presidential candidate, and that would be Ross Perot, and they refused to carry out the contract, why, of course, your life is not but your own. We still have those interviews with Chip Tatum, or you can get the interviews that Ted Gunderson did with Chip Tatum. And I would feel that if Chuck Baldwin really began to make an impact on the electoral race, so that Socialist Party A or Socialist Party B should be embarrassed by what's going on, why, they would find another assassin to take out Chuck Baldwin. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, these things really do happen in America. If you want to know the truth about the murder, the execution of Martin Luther King, we've got a great 4-tape set on that. And we carry the book written by the lawyer for the Martin Luther King family, William Pepper. It's called An Act of State. And, of course, you were never allowed to hear about the trial that the King family actually got. They accused a man named Lloyd Jowers of being involved in the murder of Martin Luther King, and he confessed, and the jury found that the government was primarily responsible for the murder of Martin Luther King, and not a word in the controlled media. The book, and An Act of State, the 4-tape set, who executed Martin Luther King, or the execution of Martin Luther King, they're available from Radio Liberty. You need to get this sort of information, and you need to share it with others. You have our permission to copy the tape set, as long as you're not making a profit on it. You have our permission to copy anything we have produced, as long as you're not making a profit on it. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Of course, our webpage is radioliberty.com, radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs 3 hours a day, actually 4 hours a day live, 3 hours a day archived on MP3, and you can watch many of our DVDs, you can read our newsletters, but the biggest thing we want you to do is start getting the information out to others, and then, of course, to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, my ministry, for our provision and our protection, because we're on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.